You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, and welcome to the first Equity Merchants episode of the year. After a brief break, we are back. Today, we have Ike Nanzeri, the co-founder and CEO of Relief. Relief is an agri-tech startup based in Nigeria that builds supply chain technology. Currently, it focuses on the oil palm sector and recently closed an oversubscribed pre-series A round. On the show, Ike now shares his journey to starting Relief, getting into Y Combinator, and moving away from the initial ideas for Relief. He also shares some thoughts on fundraising and his experience raising capital for Relief. Let's get into it. Hello, Ikenna. Welcome. And thank you for taking the time to chat. So we're going to start from the very beginning. Not everyone knows Relief. So what kind of a company is Relief? What do you do?
So Relief is a startup that uses supply chain technology to decrease the cost of food for consumer goods. So if you run a consumer goods manufacturing plant, the biggest problem that your business faces is getting the raw materials, the ingredients that you need to run your factory. A lot of these factories in Africa run under 50% of their installed capacity because of these shortages of ingredients. So Relief's job is to work directly with smallholder farmers to purchase their crops, lightly process them, and then carry them to market for these consumer good manufacturers. But the goal is to reduce the cost of food, pay farmers higher prices, and generally create a more efficient supply chain.
Doing business in Nigeria is really based on trust for the most part. So knowing that you hadn't really spent a lot of time in Nigeria before doing this, how was it in the early days getting these farmers who were your primary consumers, your primary users, how was it getting them to trust you and get to do business with you?
Yeah, so the company started off as a digital solution to serve Nigeria's agricultural market. I think we built the company and built that product while we still lived in the United States. And so we had less of an opportunity to test our assumptions on the ground. Once we finished university and NY Combinator, we moved back to Nigeria full time. And we spent about 6 months on the road, basically traveling around and exploring different agricultural value chains. And so in that process, we were able to refine and test a lot of our assumptions. And it became very clear to us that the agricultural market in Nigeria can really only be consolidated by offering both hard and soft solutions. Fortunately, our team had capabilities in both of those areas. So two of my co-founders are mechanical engineers. I come from an engineering household. My dad's a civil engineer. And then we also had software background. And so I studied computer science in university. And my two co-founders had either worked or had job offers to do software-based development at Microsoft and Facebook. And so we kind of were able to bring together these two areas of skill sets that we had to basically solve the problems that the market truly has. And I think that has been a big takeaway for Relief's culture. Like, one of our cultural sayings is go and see the land. And it's an important aspect of, we don't just sit in an office and talk about agriculture in Nigeria, but we actually go out into the field, we speak with our customers, and we see that the path forward requires a real form of partnership rather than kind of proffering the solutions to farmers and then telling them to implement it. I think the business journey in Nigeria for someone who's grown up in the States is difficult at first. I took up meditation as a practice just to calm my nerves, because I think when you come from a place where there's a different cultural practice than the new place that you're in, you do have to learn not just that, it's not you learn a new culture, but you also understand that cultures can approach different topics with a different point of view. I think building trust with farmers also takes time, and I think we built a level of patience to work with the farmers as a result of our interactions kind of traveling around the country and working with traders who are much more difficult to work with. But yeah, those issues definitely were there. And I think to a certain extent, these things serve as a barrier to entry for other market participants. And so I'm glad that we were able to spend the early part of our career building these like fundamental skills and how to work with farmers and in rural supply chains. But we're now in a position where it's time to scale those insights, build an enduring business.
Y Combinator was one of the first investors. What was the experience like? In a recent interview I watched with CTO was talking, he said Y Combinator basically says, let's give you guys money, now go ahead and let the market teach you lessons. So what was the Y Combinator experience? And how valuable do you think that experience has been in building Relief? And by the way, I'd like to know, what do you think was the main reason they decided to take on Relief, even though they didn't really understand how agriculture in Nigeria works?
Yeah, I think the Y Combinator team saw a lot of passion from our team. We actually asked our group partner, Tim Brady, like what came into their decision process. And we built out Relief while we were in university. I was at Yale, Uzo was at Duke, and Isaiah was at MIT. So we were completely remote from each other. And when we applied for Y Combinator, we basically had to get on a Zoom call and do the Y Combinator pitch and then like paste the screenshot of all three of us talking, which is irregular because most people, when they interview for the for the program, they're all in the same room. They record their video and then they send it in. And I think, yeah, I mean, our team was able to build products quickly and test them. I think what Y Combinator taught us and what's been so invaluable for our journey as a company is really, they taught us a framework for like invalidating assumptions and using basically tests to decide if a market is viable or not. And so you set up an experiment and your goal is by a certain period of time to either invalidate or validate a business model. And it has to be one of those two outcomes by a certain date. You can't continue to like move in a period of saying like, oh, well, it might work if we do this or that. You have to sit down and say, okay, we're going to do this for the next 2 weeks. If we get these results, it validates us. If we do not get these results, it invalidates us. And I think that kind of decisive approach to finding product market fit is what enabled us to try a lot of different things in a short period of time, learn very quickly, and then focus on where we were hitting gold and where we were solving a real customer problem. So YC like equipped us with the framework, but I think when we moved back to Nigeria, it required a level of courage on the part of my co-founders and I to actually go into the market and put that framework to use. And I think that has been a key aspect of what that's enabled us to accomplish what we have, and a key aspect of like our company's culture going forward. Yeah.
So after Y Combinator, you did not raise money straight away. I think you took about a couple of years before you're on the road again looking for funds. What was your experience raising money from investors for someone who, you don't come from a finance background and you've never had to raise money? So what was that experience?
Well, I think Y Combinator does a good job of teaching first-time entrepreneurs how to raise capital and what capital allocators care about. I did have a little bit of background, not in financial services, but adjacent to that industry as a management consultant. So I had some experience building pretty detailed Excel models, presentations, etc., but not squarely inside the financial service industry, but generally providing kind of like some form of financial service advisory to different firms. So as you mentioned, yes, after we finished YC in 2017, we did not participate in the program's demo day. We felt that we had not found something that we really wanted to pitch to investors. And at the time that we went through YC, funding for African startups through that accelerator was still very nascent. So we were one of like maybe the first 10 African startups that YC invested in. And so it was important that we had hit product market fit when we went out to pitch. And so we had saved money very well from like the initial investment that we got from YC. And so we had basically capital to, you know, stay on like a ramen diet and basically just make progress experimenting. And I think there was, in hindsight, there was value in us not having tons of capital when we returned to Nigeria, because it then forced us to conduct experiments ourselves rather than trying to hire a world-class team to like go and like trade soybeans in Kaduna. Like I went to Kaduna and traded those soybeans. And so I was able to develop a perspective. And so now when I hire somebody and they tell me about oh, this is what happened in the market today. I've actually been to that market and I've been alone and I've had to figure things out on my own. And so I'm able to bring that perspective rather than just relying on the report that someone gives in isolation. And so I think that, yeah, there can be a value in founders, especially when new to an industry, and doing a lot of the early experimentation on their own to develop like the right sort of barometer for how that industry works.
In the process of raising for investors, you had to value your company. And valuations are sort of a touchy topic for both founders and investors. So it's either investors want to get a good deal and they are trying to reduce valuations that you see, or founders want to, in some cases, inflate their valuations. How did you go about valuing your startup, and what were the metrics you used to justify that valuation to investors?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think startup valuations are more of an art than a science, especially as it relates to early stage companies. So I think especially during the pre-seed phase, the range of valuations that companies will get are oftentimes based on, in my opinion, the background of the founders. And so oftentimes I think that, like, if you have, you know, been educated at a world-class institution, or you have a world-class investor like Y Combinator, or you've worked at blue chip companies like Facebook or Bain or some of these other folks, the starting valuation that your company gets is oftentimes higher than someone who would have had the exact same traction but doesn't have those badges, if you will, like on their LinkedIn. And so I think that's definitely an area in which we were privileged as Nigerian American founders. But I think as a company like reaches the seed stage and thereafter, valuations are more so driven by multiples on some metric. And generally that metric is revenue in our space. And so if you want the big valuation, deliver the big revenue. It feels like a fair way to go about it. Now the multiples that are used on that revenue have varied rather drastically over the course of us building this business. They've definitely compressed quite a bit in the past 12 months, but as long as your company is continuing to grow, your valuation will grow, even if revenue multiples for valuation are decreasing. And so I think what's most important is that entrepreneurs raise the right amount of capital to deliver the right milestones and absolute traction to attract the next round of investors to continue to grow their business, as opposed to over-optimizing around the valuation that a company gets. Because to a certain extent, a valuation prevents dilution for a company, but or dilution for a company and its founders. But from another perspective, you can't eat your valuation unless you've taken out secondaries. And so I think sometimes founders can get a little bit too obsessed on the valuation piece, and it can be to the detriment of the company being able to raise the capital from the right partners to grow. And so, yeah, valuation is an interesting topic, and it's more of an art than a science, but that would be my two cents on it.
Okay, so can you share some of the experiences, that some of the challenges that you faced while you were raising for me, and how were you able to overcome them?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there is a perception that food in Africa equals nonprofits or only poverty alleviation, and there can't be a commercial engine in a business operating in Africa's largest sector. I think that's kind of strange, right? You would think that businesses operating in the largest sector on a continent could return free cash flows. And so I think that's been an education process for investors. And it's also been an important aspect of, I think, the sequencing of our storytelling, right? So I think most investors, if not all investors, want to create both a financial return and a social return for a business. I do think that some businesses that have a reputation of driving incredible financial returns oftentimes will lead with more of their social mission in starting their business, because the lucrative nature of like their industry is already known to investors, right? And so you'll see fintech companies, you know, talk about things like making life possible for everybody and things like that, right? But it's a financial technology business at the end of the day, and like their goal is to make money, right? And so as a supply chain technology company that focuses in agriculture, it's also very important for us to highlight the upside and the opportunity, the commercial upside and opportunity, because investors kind of take it as an assumption that our business's growth will drive social benefit, right? And so it's more so confronting the assumption that an investor has upfront and sequencing the way you tell your story to make sure that they understand the full scope of the opportunity, both the financial and social return. So yeah, that would be my answer on that.
What was the biggest surprise or shock when you decided to start with Foundly? I mean, yes, you mentioned Y Combinator does a very good job at preparing any early stage founders for that, but what was something that you totally did not expect when you started with it?
I think one of the things, that's actually a good question. I mean, I just to give some context, while I was doing my undergraduate studies, I took a few classes at Yale's Business School, the School of Management, and those classes were all focused on entrepreneurship. And so in those classes, I learned how to like read a cap table, how to think about like equity and like employee stock option pools, et cetera, et cetera. So I had a basic introduction to how a lot of these things work. But I don't know, I would say like the biggest surprise is just that I think investing, especially in the venture capital space, is a combination of an investor having a very strong investment thesis and what they believe will happen in Africa and the type of people that they think can achieve it. And then there's another aspect of it that's kind of driven by a confirmation bias. And so if so-and-so is in this round and the round is already subscribed, then capital becomes a lot easier to raise, things of that nature. So there's definitely a groupthink aspect that pervades venture investing. And I think even in Africa, there's even more of that because the investing community is rather small. And so GPs know each other, they can talk about deals rather openly. And so just because your pitch deck says confidential doesn't mean that the recipient is the only person that looks at it. Let me put it that way.
That's interesting. So the next question would be around lessons that you've learned from past previous efforts. So what are some lessons you've learned and how are you able to apply them to future fundraising efforts?
Yeah, so I think in the context of building the business, like the biggest mistakes that we have made have generally come from making an assumption that something is true and then building a lot of infrastructure on top of that assumption and then finding out that that assumption is not true. And so I think like routinely laying out, writing down your assumptions and the evidence that your assumptions is true is really, really critical to building technology because there are hundreds, thousands of African entrepreneurs who can build a business very quickly, who can scale teams, et cetera, et cetera. But we operate in markets that are a little bit more complicated at times and interact with human nature more often. And so if the incentivization is not properly handled, things can unravel or not grow as well as they were supposed to. So I would definitely say like assumptions. I think in the process of like fundraising, I think like we've had a great experience with every one of our investors. I don't have any negative feedback about any of our investors. I would say that one thing that a founder can always do better though is to continue to speak with other founders and get feedback and perceptions on investors and how they are to work with. I think especially as you prepare for institutional rounds of fundraising and people come onto your board, the mindset of the investor and the founder matter even more and more than they do earlier stage when people are just signing saves.
The final question would be for early stage founders who are looking to raise money, what are the top three things and advice that you should look out for and make sure that those things are present before raising money from investors?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the first thing I would say is, you know, this is easy advice to give and harder advice to follow. I'll just say start with that. But raising capital is really just a means to building your billion-dollar business. It's not the objective. And so what a founder should hold in the greatest focus is that they are actually building that billion-dollar business, not a pitch deck that can raise capital, right? And so it's very important that you as the founder, like, have done all of the tests, tested all of the assumptions, and you fundamentally believe that this is a billion-dollar company that you're building. That will come across in the way that you pitch the company. And so my advice to founders is generally not to prescribe the period to find product market fit. It's very, very like enticing to be like, okay, we just came up with this company idea. In 6 months, we'll be doing 500K ARR, then we'll raise our next round, da 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 da. The process of finding real product market fit that can scale to billions of dollars in revenue, you don't know how long it's gonna take you to figure that out. And so as a founder, if you can keep your expenses low and focus on truly finding real product market fit that can scale to billions in revenue, it won't matter if you got to 500K ARR in your first 6 months. What will matter is that you took your time to find something that actually works so that when you actually start scaling that thing, it continues to scale. Because oftentimes what happens to startups is they find something that is like half product market fit, they start scaling it, maybe they raise some capital, things seem good, but then they realize that that thing did not really hit product market fit, and then their growth begins to plateau, and then it becomes very difficult to go back to the process of finding product market fit while having metrics that you were already expected to be growing. And so I definitely encourage like a period of understanding and truly finding an opportunity before trying to rapidly scale. Even though, I mean, everyone wants to be super successful, we all want to be on the cover of Forbes that we, you know, got to $1 billion in revenue in 3 years. But the reality is like startups take 10 years to build. Even the smartest people take 10 years to build these things. So getting excellent product market fit early is what is going to enable you to actually get to the end goal, not just to start.
A lot of advice for that. I usually ask where you see yourself in 5 years, and at least 90% of them say we are going to win for 5 years. The reality is just it's harder to grow in 5 years. And even though that's it's a nice thing to aspire to, but it's really new. So yeah, thank you so much, Kevin, for sharing your thoughts.
Always great to catch up with you, Chief. Speak soon, yeah?
That's it for today's episode of Equity Motors. Please like, subscribe, and share the podcast.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.